Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. The show is also sponsored by reclaimingtherepublic.org. And I am here live if you want to call in. The phone lines are open. I have done everything necessary so that you can call. A few times I have messed that up. But anyway, I am definitely not perfect, and you can write on your calendar almost daily the mistakes I make. I'm not sure how many people out there are perfect, but my better half is. But anyway, let me move on. You are listening to the only show that asserts the constitutional solution to getting the general government back into the framework of the Constitution. I will tell you that the status quo will not work. I will tell you that the election system will not work at the national level. We have to take back the local election process. And I'm writing a set of bullets that will go into that. But if we are going to succeed in reclaiming the Republic, we literally have to clean up our backyard, because we've got to take care of our own swamp before we can worry about that big national swamp that is literally consuming us and designed to doom us. So the number to call in is 215-867-8255. Again, that is 215-TOP-TALK. And I will also tell you that this show is dedicated to those grassroots leaders at the local level. I'm going to try to help providing them with content and some leadership, as well as, I mean, there's plenty of really good leaders that already kind of know and recognize. Some of them are already working in this, but I am here to try to help them and help reinforce what they're trying to do. And those that are literally just being kind of, what do you want to say? I would probably put it to those who have been led and or being told to manage their counties, manage the local level, and not allowed to leave, or lead, I should say, they are going to learn that they can lead and they can basically shirk off those upper level directions, especially in those big states with lots of money. And I kind of talked about that yesterday, but this show is really dedicated in supporting them and those local legislators who need to understand their job in protecting us from federal tyranny. We need to get them to be willing to sign a pledge and dedicate their service to ending federal tyranny. And when they do that, they will be protecting all of us from federal tyranny. I will also tell you that I have that presentation on reclaimingtherepublic.org that would be probably your best 30 minutes spent. I know you can probably go and watch all sorts of conservative entertainment and all sorts of really interesting entertainment or information and so forth. But if you really want to understand what it takes to identify what the problem is and the solution of how to overcome this problem, it is nothing you have been taught before. And it is as simple as auditing the contract. I couldn't put it any simpler, because the Constitution is a contract, and those stakeholders, the states, have the inherent authority to audit that contract. And so go watch that video. You'll kind of understand exactly what I'm talking about. I set the argument up, and I would welcome your feedback. And I would also welcome your support. Again, it's never really about money, even though it seems like everything's dependent on money. I think it's also really about principles. And if you have the time, and if you've got a computer resources and so forth, I can use more help. I'm getting some, but I could really use your help. And so I'm just reaching out to those listeners that have some time. Ping me by just sending me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org, and I will get back to you and, you know, give you some content and let you start working, because I just need people to parse data. Even if it, you know, gets to a point where you can do phone calls and so forth, I need champions that can stand up and say, this is without a doubt the only process. And as a matter of fact, a lot of the people that are coming on board are those who are engaged in the Convention of States, because those people are already passionate about trying to do something instead of just standing, you know, holding the line of the status quo and watching this Republican Constitution get shredded and go into the ditch, or I should say the abyss. But anyway, I will grovel one more time. If you have time and you can support, I would really appreciate it. And as always, I am looking out my window currently, and I have already scanned the news, and there is really no sign of the federal government disbanding any of its tyrannical roles, responsibilities, and powers. So that means you and I, we will have to do this. And I think, as a matter of fact, if you think it's going to take millions of people to do this, it won't. I don't need all 545 state legislators. I only need a majority of them. So if you cut that in half, then, you know, 2,800 or more, I'd be happy with that. So just be amazed at what little it will take to literally take this Constitution back, and what it would take to actually save the Republic. Now, granted, there's no money, and this is not a treasure trove for anybody to be able to go get rich, but I will tell you that your posterity will be rich with liberties if we do this. And so, as always, let me present the question that I've been kind of throwing out there for a while now, and I will probably come up with a new question, maybe to stimulate some new conversation, but where or what in the Constitution gives the federal government the authority to create and manage land reservations within states? Because the only land, mass land, that they constitutionally can have is for military purposes, military training, military bases, and so forth. And the District of Columbia, that is where they have exclusive legislative powers. Anyway, so where or what in the Constitution gives them this authority to be able to take state lands and creating these reservations, for whether it be for forestry, agriculture, for environmental purposes, for race, culture? It doesn't matter. Where do they get this authority in the Constitution? And I think as you look to try to answer that question, you will start to understand what the federal government has the authority to do and what they don't have the authority to do. As you know, the Red Pill Expo is coming up. It is going to be, I think it's 2 weeks from today, on the 21st of June to the 23rd. And oh, by the way, if you've never been in the Northern Latitude, let's say you're in Florida, you've never been to the Northern Latitude, you'll be surprised to find that it's practically daylight out at around 9:30, 10 o'clock, or, you know, it's not daylight, but you have the evening nautical twilight, so you can still see visually a good distance, and the sun comes up very early, so you need to go to bed as soon as the sun comes down. It goes down if you're one of those people that cannot sleep when the sun is up, like myself. I know there's lots of people that can sleep in the sun and daylight, but I am not one that has that luxury or ability. For some reason, Mr. Sunshine, those sun rays just crack open my eyes and I cannot shut them. Anywho, as you know, we're coming up on that time where they're going to start forecasting the prices of what it's going to take to buy your Obamacare. And I know there's a lot of political posturing on this, but at your expense is where this political posturing is leading. And I know that the Republicans are going to say, you know, look, hey, we still have this. We tried to, you know, repeal and replace this. I still say that you have to assert to your state legislators and to your state leaders to repeal this. If we don't repeal this, this will destroy us, along with all of the other things that are just piling on our back. So, as we move forward into this election year, I think that there's going to be a lot of political hay. I think the Democrats are going to say, well, look, the price is going up because they didn't fix it, because they didn't. So what the Democrats would rather see is a significant tax increase to take more money out of your pocket to pay for more entitlements, because there is not an entitlement that they don't like. There is not a sin that they don't want to correct. And so, and I talk about this in my book, because bottom line, the evil, insidious communists, what they want to do is they want to marginalize or remove the consequences. And I call them sins. If you consider, you know, drinking maybe a sin, if you consider smoking or doing anything that's harmful to you physically or spiritually and or morally, however you want to look at it, because it's the same thing with STDs. They spend millions and billions of dollars in fighting AIDS and STDs and so forth. Why? If we were a good society behaving, then we wouldn't have to spend all of that money. We wouldn't have to spend all that money in fighting, you know, lung cancer and the diseases that come from smoking, drinking, and those types of things. Where would we be as a society if we behaved as a true enlightened society, because we have learned our lessons that we need to avoid doing things where we have empirical data that they will harm you, that they are not good, they'll destroy your lives, they destroy your families, they just have an evil effect in our lives. The same thing with gambling or anything that's addictive. Why is it that we live in a society that is trying to marginalize the impacts of these things instead of trying to enlighten us in trying to overcome and not succumb to that type of behavior? That was the enlightenment of the framers. We need to restore that. But that is a topic for another day, because I'm not going to go into the Platonist and enlightenment. I am going to get into some more news, but I also have the ratification debates coming up. So please stay tuned. We're getting into ending up the Massachusetts and going into North Carolina next. So please stay tuned. Most people resist change, but how would you like to be rewarded in at least two ways for considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy believes your smile is a reflection upon him, and that is a mutually shared reward between both him and you. Another reward is improving your overall health by working with your dentist like Dr. Tracy and developing a strategy in maintaining your dental health. But how would you like a direct incentive in considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy and his staff from time to time offer a special referral program. For every new patient you refer who becomes a patient, Dr. Tracy will reward you with $50 off your dental work. Consequently, if you refer five people, that's $250 off your dental work. Give them a call and ask for the details and the availability of the referral program by calling 466-6614 or go to VonTracyDDS.com. Again, that's 466-6614 or sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I'm trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, process. This is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
I'm not sure if you remember, but we've been talking quite a bit, and I should say reacting, because again, we're only reacting to the carnage that's going on from all of this unconstitutional government. But I've mentioned quite a bit, and I actually started this last year after Trump took office, because what did he start railing on at the very beginning? He was railing about the judges and the judicial process, the judicial system. And so for almost the past year and a half, I've been challenging Trump to basically get Congress to do their job. There has not been a reeling in of the judiciary for a long, long time. And the last time, and it wasn't even a reeling in, FDR basically was going to stack the courts. He was going to grow the courts, and he was going to stack them with a bunch of progressive judges. That's using politics from the bench, because these guys are not, objective and unbiased. These judges, most all of them, are biased to some degree, and you can see throughout the history of the Republic that the court system has been flawed, because what was being sold back in those days when they had integrity and personal honor and so forth, those judges, and I'm sure those involved in the law or legal, career or profession, I'm sure they were really good folks, but it has become a political agenda from slavery to enslavement of the state and self-aggrandizing the federal government. And so Trump needs to go and poke Congress in the eye. It's kind of late this year because they're doing an election year. But he needs, after this election in November, if there's going to be another Republican majority, he needs to poke them in the eye and say, look, you need to reel in these courts. You need to go in and do a Judiciary Act and reel them in, because Congress has the authority in the Constitution to do this. But they won't. And the reason why they won't into reeling them in, because what Congress should do is Congress should state, hey, you have no purview over anything that is not in the Constitution. You can only review and make rulings on cases of those things within the Constitution. Why won't Congress do that? Because Congress is operating well outside the bounds with health care, Social Security, and all these other things. So the point in fact is that Trump can poke them in the eye and they can do some little Band-Aids, but they really won't fix the problem. That's why I keep on saying, folks, that this requires you to get engaged. This requires all of us to get engaged at the local level. You don't need to spend a lot of money, but I will tell you, if you understand the Constitution, then you can become a real force, because you're going to find that there's a lot of people out there that don't understand it, and they're going to be begging for you to explain things to them, because that's exactly what happened. As I started understanding the Constitution, people go, well, what does this mean? What do you think about this? And I don't know if you want to have that kind of attention or that kind of frustration, because you go, just go pick up the document. It's not that much to read. Anyway, and there's some really good content out there. I've had a couple of the authors on this show talk about their content. I think John Chambers is one. And I would highly recommend you go out and pick up their little guide to the study guide or what have you to the Constitution. That kind of helps you through it if it doesn't make sense to you or if you don't understand the background on it. But again, my
point, in fact, is that Congress really won't fix this, and the federal government is incapable of fixing this. And that was one thing Obama was right on. Washington, D.C. cannot fix Washington, D.C. on its own. It has to be fixed because the public gets engaged, or because you and I are going to fix it. One other thing in the news, I know that in the lawsuit with the Chinese ZTE company, the cell phones and so forth, I know that they just settled, and they're, instead of banning them, they're going to allow them to continue selling. They've got a $1 billion fine. So I'm not sure how many years that'll take for them to, you know, pay that back. But I will say this, I'm not sure who is dumb enough to buy products that are designed to spy on their owner and, you know, designed to have back doors so that your phone and your devices can be hacked and spied on you. Who would want that? I mean, who would want anything like that? I mean, it's bad enough when you pick up a Samsung or an iPhone or what have you, because even the software that you install on your cell phones, whether it be Google or whether it be Chrome or whether it be Amazon or what have you, they are all spying on you. I can't believe that this is not a well-known thing. Or I can't believe that people are still subjecting themselves, because I look at a lot of people that carry smartphones and they all go, you don't use your smartphone for all these great features? And I go, no, I really relish my privacy. I can wait till I get home to do that. I just use my phone as a phone, and the camera, that is a non-intrusive device. The video and the microphone, that can be kind of dangerous, but anywho. The point, in fact, is that if you're going to buy the ZTE product, just know going in that you're going to be spied on. I also want to just basically say that, as I always say, we need to start using the Constitution and fighting our battles. And so if we're not using it as our shield and as our weapon, we are going to lose these battles. But without further ado, I do want to get into, because I was reading an excerpt from Mr. Thatcher, who was a reverend at the time. And what I wanted to do was finish that, because I found what he was saying very profound. And so I wanted to share that. But what's more important is, as I always say this, are the words in these founding documents that I read and I'm citing for you, are these the words of deceit? Or are the words that we've been taught from our progressive education system, the media, and all of these people telling us what the... I mean, even, what was her name? Megyn Kelly on Fox News. I remember she was trying to tell us what the Constitution said, like she's a constitutional scholar. She is an ideologue trying to drive an agenda. And I'm an ideologue trying to drive an agenda on truth. My ideologue or my ideology is on individual liberty and sovereignty. So let me try to get in before we hit this next break, because I did want to get into the North Carolina ratification debates. And Mr. Thatcher said, if this system is broken up, will 13 or even 9 states ever agree to another? And will Providence smile on a people who despise the privileges put into their hands and who neglect the plainest principles of justice and honesty? After all, I by no means pretend that there is a complete perfection in this proposed Constitution. Like all other human productions, it hath faults. Provision is made for an amendment. So he's basically saying that within the Article 5, there is a provision for an amendment. From practice, it is found oppressive. I would add the proposal which His Excellency hath considered condescended to lay before this honorable convention, because he's really addressing the fact that John Hancock had provided some improvements or amendments to this thing. Respecting future alterations are real improvements for the better, and we have no reason to doubt but they will be equally attended to by the states as they lead to common security and preservation. Some of the gentlemen in the opposition have quoted ancient history and applied it to the question now under debate. And I'm going to take a break right here because I know for a fact that when people talk about, and there's reasons why I don't support the Convention of States, but it has nothing to do with ancient history. It has nothing to do with what Madison's feelings were. It has nothing to do with the fact that they want to tell you that the first convention was a runaway convention. That is a lie. They knew what Madison defended everything he did as a part of that convention as not a runaway convention. He basically said we were doing exactly what we were told, and everybody knew that. I mean, Governor Randolph and a couple of other governors were involved in this process. They knew exactly what was going down, and they knew that they had to do something because the Confederacy or the Articles of Confederation were going to fail. And if not, I mean, this is what these gentlemen have been talking about. And so I'll get back into what Mr. Thatcher was saying as soon as we get back from this hard break. But I hope you're finding this enlightening because this actually supports the need for taking back the Constitution, not through an Article 5 process, but through the auditing process. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Thank you so much. Most of my listeners understand the importance in having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategy for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of your teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money just to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail, and if you don't have a long-term strategy for your teeth and dental health, then you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain and restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Von Tracy, DDS.com. That's VonTracyDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
And I hope you recognize that these are really, really profound words. So let me continue on. And what he talks about, he basically is telling you the truth. And he goes on, he says, some of the gentlemen in the opposition have quoted ancient history and applied it to the question now under debate. They have shown us the danger which arises from vesting magistrates with too much power. I wish they had gone on to tell the whole truth. They might have shown how nearly licentiousness and tyranny are aligned, that they who will not be governed by reason must submit to force, that demagogues in all free governments have at first held out an idea of extreme liberty and have seized on the rights of the people under the mask of patriotism. Be advised, folks, this is happening. They might have shown us a republic in which wisdom, virtue, and order were qualities for which a man was liable to banishment, and on the other hand, boasting sedition and falsehood, the sure road to honor and promotion. I am sorry that it hath been hinted by some gentlemen in this house as if it were a combination of the rich and the learned and those of liberal professions to establish and support an arbitrary form of government. Far be it for me to retort an uncharitable and unchristian a suggestion. I doubt not the gentlemen who are different sentiments from myself are actuated by the purest motives. Some of them I have the pleasure of being particularly acquainted with, and can safely pronounce them to be men of virtue and honor. They have no doubt a laudable concern for their liberties in their country, but I would beg them to remember that extreme jealousy and suspicion may be as fatal as freedom as security, or fatal to freedom as security and negligence. With respect to myself, I am conscious of no motive which gives me in this great and solemn question but what I could justify to in my own heart. Both on the bed of death and before the tribunal of omnipotence, I am a poor man. I have the feelings of a poor man. If there are honors and emoluments in this proposed constitution, I shall, by my profession and circumstances in life, be forever excluded from them. It is my wish and prayer that in the solemn verdict we are very soon to pronounce, we may be directed to that measure which will be for the glory, freedom, and felicity of my country. I shall trouble this house no further than by joining sincerely in the wish of the honorable gentleman of Topsham, that the people in their day may know the things which belong to their peace. And so it's interesting how, you know, Massachusetts was really focused on the virtues and the principles, and they also had a different paradigm, because their paradigm was, what could we do to improve upon this? Because like I said, John Hancock was the one who single-handedly moved the standard of ratifying the convention and sending in recommended amendments, which was literally, I believe, the cascading effect that forced the Bill of Rights to be one of the first matters of business in the very first session of Congress, that James Madison himself single-handedly ensured that it was done. Had he not taken that personal approach in making sure it got done, we would not have a Bill of Rights today, period. And so I want to also, you know, if you look at Massachusetts at the time, most people don't know these little tidbits and little facts, but I talk about this in my book. Massachusetts, hands down, was the leading colony in health. It was the leading state, I should say, in, life expectancy. There you go. I think people were living at the time of the Constitution, the average life expectancy for those who survived the early death of a baby, because they still had a high infant mortality rate. But if you survived that, you had I think the average life expectancy was 70 years.
They had a much higher literacy rate than any other state. So they were really leading. But I want you to understand that they were a unique state. They were almost a theocracy. If you understand the way that government in Massachusetts was set up, they actually ran out anybody that would preach anything that wasn't of the Puritan faith. That's why some other states were literally started, Rhode Island being one, and I think New Hampshire was another one, where the individual that was professing apostasy or abominations or what have you, and there were two, again, they were literally written out, and I'd have to open my book, because you know me and names, I'm really bad about that. But I will tell you that if you go through the history of Massachusetts, it is astonishing in how they were really leading under their theocracy. So they were a very enlightened society, and they were looking to seek even greater enlightenment, if you understand what I mean. And so with that, we'll kind of put Massachusetts to the side. And what I'm doing is, as I'm going through this, I'm kind of creating a hit list or my favorite citations and so forth as I go through these ratification debates that I think are really imperative to share with you. And so if you want to get those from me, by all means, I'll send them to you or what have you. But let me move on to North Carolina. So North Carolina was kind of interesting. And so you will find that slavery was brought up in the ratification debates, at least the version that I have from the Avalon Project. They mentioned slavery of some kind, slavery or what have you, S-L-A-V. You'll find that that word appears 39 times in almost a 200-page document. And so it's not like it's heavily peppered, but it is significant enough to know that they were very well, and they were conscious of the fact that this new government was almost hostile towards slavery. And I'm telling you, the fact that other academics and or other people would have you believe differently. You got to understand that there was this 1808 clause in Article 9, I think Section 10, that talked about the dismantling of, or Article 1, Section 10, talks about the dismantling of the slave trade. Not only did they create that or put that into the Constitution, and I think I told you the backstory on this, they not only put that into the Constitution, but go check out Article 5. There's this Amendment Protection Clause where I talk about the states shall not lose equal suffrage without their consent. Right before that, they make an assertion of the Article 1, Section 10, or maybe it's Section 9, but they say no amendment can be passed that will change the 1808 clause that literally identifies the standing down. So in other words, they put in the Constitution this rule that, you know, was going to shut down the slave trade. And then they put a protection in Article 5 to say you cannot pass an amendment that will cut that out or take that out or diminish that in any way. In other words, they locked it in. There was no way that the South or a group of states could come along and say, hey, we want to disband that. They wanted to make sure that the slave trade was doomed, because by ending the slave trade, what they did was they put a cap on how many representatives, because that's why they had this 3/4 rule. See, the South wanted to count a full head for a slave, so they wouldn't be the three-fifths, not the 3/4, the 3/5 rule. And so what they were doing by diminishing it wasn't to diminish the human being itself, was the fact to say that the slaves were not given the liberty to be able to vote for themselves and do other things, so that they were not, the Southerners, the slave masters, were not going to be able to get a full apportionment for each of their slaves. If you go through the debates on this, it's absolutely fascinating, and how you hear that the framers thought the slaves were less of a men or a lesser people. That is not the case. What they were doing was they were calling the South out for hypocrisy to say, hey, you're enslaving these people and you want to count them as a regular human being, then why don't you free them? So they were literally bantering back and forth with this. And I think it has been misrepresented for years and years. I've got to go to a hard break, and I will be right back after a word from our sponsors. It's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit, and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way myself with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I've learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Von Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money away on just a good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I would ask you to give Dr. Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 509-466-6614. Again, sign up at VONTRACYDDS.com. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcasts and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. So let me get into some other little facts regarding the North Carolina debates. First off, there were three signers of the Constitution from North Carolina. Mr. Blount, William Blount, Richard Dobbs Spate, and Hugh Williamson. And so you'll find that most of the really good arguments coming out of the debates actually really aren't these three men in leading in thought. And you got to remember that the majority of the time that they were performing or going through what they were going to create in this new Constitution, as they were parsing and dicing up the old Articles of Confederation, there were plenty of times, because there was a lot of hostility. Again, I cannot emphasize enough that the 10 states wanted, 10 of the states wanted to disband and get rid of slavery, period. Georgia and the two Carolinas were the states that said, no way, we're keeping this. If you're going to make this an issue, then we're leaving. And I've gone on record. I think that that was a huge political miscalculation on the framers for allowing that to happen. Anyway, here's the interesting facts. North Carolina was unable to ratify the Constitution in 1788 when they first met. And it actually went until, I think, 1789. And as a matter of fact, I believe that they joined the Union right before the very first remembrance of Thanksgiving, George Washington's proclamation as for Thanksgiving. And I've talked about that before, but they just joined the Union November 21st in 1789. And so their first convention in 1788, and here's the interesting thing, it went from July 21st to August 4th. Now, I will tell you that if you've ever been in North Carolina, or if you live in the South, you already know this. Those are oppressive months. I mean, it is hard to deal with the humidity and the heat factors. And I believe it was pretty bad back then. And I do remember, because Virginia did theirs in June, and there was a calamity of a storm that hit them. And as a matter of fact, it interrupted Patrick Henry's speech, because Patrick Henry was basically saying, if I'm lying, then I would call the powers of heaven to come down and strike this church. And at that point, the storm literally descended upon the church, and a lot of people go, oh my. And that was right before they actually voted. And that may have actually persuaded some people to really consider alternate, you know, thoughts if they were not going to ratify some of the anti-federalists or so forth. But anyway, if you understand the more suitable times to actually convene a convention and to, you know, actually work, one would think that, you know, early winter, and Massachusetts did theirs in the heart of a very harsh winter that year, where North Carolina probably would have been better suited. As a matter of fact, I think it even snowed in North Carolina in January and February that year. And so it was a pretty harsh winter. I would have thought that they would have done it in early spring, or, you know, not in the heat of summer. But anyway, one of the things that I also learned that is not really documented in the ratification debates, and that's why it's really interesting to get into a lot of the history of all of this, the anti-federalists had a side interest. They had a self-interest in maintaining autonomy from the Union, and that was they had designs in preserving the state dollar because they were heavily invested in it. And so the success of the ratification of the Constitution, because when they were meeting, they had already heard, because again, from July 21st to August 4th, they've already learned that Virginia and New York were in the Union. And so what that meant was that there were 11 states, and they were one that wasn't in the Union with them. I believe South Carolina and Rhode Island were the other two states that hadn't joined yet. And so what happened was, when they held this convention, and they actually had some very good arguments, and I'm going to go through these, the success of the federal government in 1789 and the forthcoming of the Bill of Rights was the anti-federalist demise, because it was almost an open and shut case when they met in November of 1789. They basically voted, and it was a pretty solid ratification. In the previous year, they didn't want to vote because they didn't want to not ratify, and so there was a reason for breaking it up. And I haven't gotten into all of that, but I do want to get into this this first quote that I have, and. This is by, I believe, the Mr. McLean, and he is basically, let me read this quote here. The gentleman has wandered out of his way to tell us what has so often been said out of doors, that there is no Declaration of Rights. So again, they're hearing the exact same thing, that there's no Declaration, there's no Bill of Rights. that consequently, all our rights are to be taken away. It would be very extraordinary to have a Bill of Rights because the power of Congress are expressly defined. Now, again, this is the Federalist argument going against this call for a Bill of Rights. And so anyway, he says, it would be very extraordinary to have a Bill of Rights because the powers of Congress are expressly defined and the very definition of them is as valid and efficacious as a check as a Bill of Rights or as a Bill of Rights could be without the dangerous implications of a Bill of Rights. The powers of Congress are limited and enumerated. So he's basically making the exact same assertions that Madison had been saying, that you don't need a Bill of Rights, that the powers are clearly listed. They can't do anything that's not listed in the Constitution. And so here is another state. And oh, by the way, when you go and read these other state ratifications, you will not find anybody that has been a delegate for the convention, for the Constitutional Convention, and a Federalist basically asserting that you won't find any of them asserting, oh, the federal government can do whatever they think necessary and proper. They're supreme in all things. There is nowhere where there's those dialogues. There are people that are trying to assert that, but each time they assert that, they says that is not represented or that is not correlated by what we're reading here. And what he is saying here is we say we have given them those powers, but we do not say we have given them more. We retain all those rights which we have not given away to the general government. The gentleman is a professional man. If a gentleman had made his last will and testament and devised or bequeathed to a particular person the sixth part of his property or any particular specific legacy, could it be said that that person should have the whole estate if they can assume the powers not enumerated? There was no occasion for enumerating any powers. The gentleman is learned. Without reoccurring to his learning, he may only appeal to his common sense. It will inform him that if he had all the power before and given away but a part, we still retain the rest. It is as plain a thing as possibly can be that Congress can have no power but what we expressly give them. There is an express clause which, however disingenuously it has been perverted from its true meaning, clearly demonstrates that they are confined to those powers which are given them. This clause enables them to make all laws necessary and proper for carrying out the execution of the foregoing powers, and all powers vested by this Constitution in the government of the United States or of the Department of Officers thereof. This clause specifically that they shall make laws to carry out into execution all the powers vested by this Constitution. Consequently, they can make no laws to execute any other power. This clause gives no new power, but declares that those already given can be executed by proper laws. I hope this will satisfy the gentleman. And of course it doesn't, because they're still trying to hedge in keeping the Constitution from being moved forward. And so you will find that we are, you know, getting a consistent feel and a consistent read from all of these ratification debates, that they are hard limited to what is in the Constitution. That's what you've been hearing from me. And you're going to hear more of that from me tomorrow, for the terrestrial stations are going to be going away. Thank you for joining us. I will be giving everybody, as soon as we let them go, what we're doing tomorrow. And so tomorrow, I actually have some more citations. Governor Johnston of North Carolina stands up, and he's actually has some pretty interesting things to say regarding support of the Constitution, and Mr. Iredell, who is one of the best orators. Him and George Nicholas were very good orators in sharing I think the arguments that were well articulated as well from Madison. I mean, Madison, what? Not that he wasn't, and as a matter of fact, he was probably one of the most respected men because he was definitely one of the most prepared. But these gentlemen in the South, in North Carolina, were very, very good. And so we'll get into that tomorrow. I am G.R. Mobley, and with your help, we will reclaim the Republic. Thank you. God bless.